Our gospel reading for today is from the 17th chapter of John, verses 20 to 26. I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are one in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one, I in them, and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them. The word of the Lord.
You know, one thing I've noticed is that sometimes our biggest strengths can be also our biggest weaknesses, and our biggest weaknesses can be turned into our biggest strengths. I think about how weaknesses can be strengths, and I remember a time in this church where someone was struggling with a situation of great anxiety and depression, and you know, that can be a difficult thing to be through when you're going through depression. And another member reached out to them, and they were able to do it so effectively because they had gone through depression years earlier in their life. And I'm sure when they were going through their era of depression that it seemed like just weakness. It seems like something that they wanted to get rid of that was just bringing them down. But that weakness became a strength when they could help someone else. So our weaknesses can become our strengths. It's also true that our strengths can sometimes be our weaknesses. I have a friend who has this really neat grandfather who I was good friends with him, and so I got the chance to hang out with his grandfather a few times too. And this grandfather is a really neat guy. He's very intelligent, he's very logical, he's very orderly in his life. If you go into his house, everything's clean. If you open a closet, everything's stacked in perfect right angles and piles. Very linear kind of guy. And he's been a successful person. He was an executive in the auto industry in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And as you might imagine, he was in the area of quality control, which was perfect for him because he was all about making sure things were done correctly. And so anyways, he had a lot of success because of his orderly, logical, intelligent personality. But then one day, I was hanging out with him and my friend and their family, and we were playing a board game called Apples to Apples, and I'll explain a little bit how it works. What it is each round, a bunch of people are sitting there, and one person draws out a theme word, and the theme word might be something really happy, you know, like a vacation, or it might be something really unpleasant, like a splinter or the flu. And so one person draws the theme word, and then everyone else draws different words that are all describing words. And their job, they have a bunch of different ones in their hand, each person. You have to pick the describing word that you think the person who picked the theme word will most like. So say the word is splinter. You have to think, what answer should I do that most defines splinter? And what you'll find in this game is that some people are into literal, straightforward answers. So if the theme is splinter, some people will put down cards like awful, painful, bad. But then other times you're playing with people who are more silly or sarcastic. And that's the other thing in the game you could do. Instead of putting something that's literally true, you can put the exact opposite. You can put, you know, splinter, awesome, dreamy, lovable. And it just so happened that this grandfather was playing with a lot of silly, sarcastic people. And so, you know, a bad word would come up like splinter, and everyone's putting great, awesome, wonderful, and he's putting no, awful, bad, and which one would the person pick? They were picking the silly ones, and over, you know, we'd go through another round, and the wrong answer would be picked from his perspective. And I remember him sitting there after the game, he didn't get a single answer right, because he kept on picking the straightforward, literal answer, and he couldn't wrap his mind around that someone would do a sarcastic, silly answer, and he said, I just don't understand it, those answers were all wrong. Well, that's a silly example, but, you know, sometimes our strengths can be our weaknesses. And when I think about our Lutheran tradition, who we are as Lutheran Christians, I think one of our strengths is that historically, we have been really devoted to gaining a deep understanding of God and the Bible and the life of faith. We are really committed to searching for religious truth. And, you know, if you ever want to do some deep reading into, like, theology or belief or just biblical studies, Lutherans have some of the best stuff. I mean, we have these incredible documents, both from Luther and beyond, that can help us think deeply about our faith. And, you know, issues of belief is actually why the Lutheran Church began in the first place. You probably heard about how Lutheranism became an independent tradition because there were Catholics and there were people who are currently Catholics, but they were future Lutherans, and there was a disagreement over how to understand the gospel message, and the split over those beliefs is what created Lutheranism, a split in how we should understand God as a graceful God. And so beliefs have been really central, and those have been what we kind of pin ourselves on. But unfortunately, after we split from the Catholics, the splitting wasn't done there. After that, you know, there were Lutheran traditions in lots of different European countries, at first in Germany, later in places like Norway and Sweden. And over time, there got to be all these individual, separate Lutheran churches. Eventually, other Reformed traditions sprung up, like the Presbyterians, and we didn't agree with them on communion, so we split with them over issues of communion. And then eventually, Lutheranism came to the U.S., and it originally came in different ethnic communities. And sometimes there was coming together in different churches to form denominations, but there were also lots of splits. You know, oh, we disagree about this. Okay, we split again. Oh, we disagree about that. Okay, we're going to split again. And that's why today there's not really one Lutheran church. There's the ELCA, which is this denomination. There's the Missouri Synod. There's the Wisconsin Synod. And there's several other smaller types. So within Lutheranism, we have this heritage of splitting whenever we encounter major disagreements. Now, I do want to lift up that as Lutherans, we should be proud in a lot of ways of our tradition of searching for theological truth. We really want to be right and sophisticated in our belief, and in some ways, this is really admirable. But, you know, sometimes our strengths can be our weaknesses, and maybe our need to agree on everything in order to be united in the faith has been one of the weaknesses of our Lutheran tradition. In today's gospel reading from John, Jesus is about to be crucified, and I really love this section because it's right before his crucifixion, and Jesus is praying for his disciples, for his followers. And so the words that you hear are part of Jesus' prayer, and they're really amazing words because they sort of reveal Jesus' final vision for his followers before he's going to leave. And among the different thing that Jesus prays in this section, there's one thing that he lifts up again and again. And that's that he has this hope that his followers will be one. And here's a little section of Jesus' prayer that we heard today in the gospel reading. Jesus says, "The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one, as we are one. I in them and you in me, that they may be completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me." So to recap a little bit of that language in his prayer, Jesus' vision and his prayer is that his people, Christians, God's people, would be one. Because he says the unity of God's followers reflects the unity that Jesus has with God the Father. And he also says something else. He says the unity that Christians have in the world is actually part of our witness. It's part of our message, because when non-believers see the unity of the church, then they can understand the unity of God, the message of the gospel. Well, when I think about this and when I read this section, you know, sometimes I think, uh-oh. God wants us to be united as the church, and yet our history, like I mentioned earlier, is really one of quite a bit of division. Like I mentioned before, within the Lutheran tradition, we have often behaved as if we basically have to agree on everything in order to be united. But of course, if you look at any human relationship, this isn't a realistic or even a healthy expectation to have. I don't know what your family is like, but in mine, we don't agree on everything, whether I'm talking about our immediate family, me and my wife, or our extended family, or my in-laws. Most families don't agree on everything. And in today's world, there are certain hot-button topics which can cause debates or even arguments, whether we're talking about politics or social issues or even religious questions. Now, I want you to put yourself into a family, and maybe this is your family, where not everyone agrees on everything. You love each other, but you don't agree on everything. And I want you to imagine that you're going to a big Thanksgiving dinner with lots of your family and extended family. And so you sit down for the meal, and you sit down and you say to your family, "All right, we are going to discuss all of these divisive issues, and we aren't going to be a family unless we agree on everything." Well, hopefully this doesn't happen in your family, because this would be foolishness, right? To be a family, you have to be able to overlook the fact that you don't agree on everything, and you have to be able to love and care for each other even when there's disagreement. So sometimes I wonder why in the church have we acted as if we have to agree on everything in order to be God's family. Well, as we hear the story today, maybe as Christians, we need to take Jesus' prayer more seriously. Maybe as Lutherans, we need to remember that sometimes unity of the people is more important than purity, than everyone agreeing about everything. So I want to ask, what would it look like for people of faith to be uniters in this world where there's a lot of division? You know, so far I've been talking about unity in the church, but I also think Jesus' prayer speaks deeply to our current situation in this country and our current culture. I think many of us would agree that we live in a time of deep division in our country. Division over politics, division over economics, division racially, division over social issues. And you know, one of the strengths of the American identity has been our commitment to individual rights and individual expression. And this has been a wonderful thing that protects individuals. But I wonder if sometimes part of our division in this country is that our individualism has sometimes gone far in the way we think about it for ourselves. Many people today feel like they should be able to live however they want without considering what it does for other people. Many times we spend our money without considering others. Many times we vote without considering others. Many times we express our opinions without considering how it sounds to others. Many times we pollute our planet without considering others. And I think a lot of this kind of living for ourselves comes from believing this myth that we have in our country that we are not interconnected, that we're all these independent people and independent families that can live independently without affecting each other. But of course, we are deeply interconnected in this world. My actions and your actions affect others, whether we like it or believe it or not. Well, today, I think Jesus tells us a helpful message for our culture. He says, interconnection isn't bad. Interconnection is good when it leads to unity. And unity is good. So Jesus says to us, don't run away from your relationships and don't run away from your responsibility in your relationships to your family, to your church, to your society, to the poor, to those who need help. Embrace your responsibility to your neighbor. You know, I like to believe Jesus always takes his relationship with us seriously. So can we as followers of Jesus take Jesus' prayer seriously as his followers? Can we embrace the interconnectedness that we have with other children of God just because they're children of God, even though we may not always disagree with them? And can we heed God's call to be uniters in this world when there's so much division? Something to think about. Amen.